This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
The Morning Roast with Joe Spadoni.
Listen to that guy driving the bus, man. Damn, Spadoni. Damn, you sound good.
And Joe Shasky from 6 to 10 on 95.7 The Game.
Love the Major League theme song. Usually we play that when we win, not coming off an L like the Giants did yesterday. 7-4 the final. Padres over the Gigantes. We're going to talk about it with Dave Fleming, I should say, Giants broadcaster, coming up here shortly. And by the way, if you want to get more Giants talk, subscribe to the Gog, Fries, and Baseball Guys podcast. Sam Lubman, Joe Shasky, and occasionally the guy running the board today, Steven Rizzotto, have the best Giants talk in the world. Subscribe now, because this week they'll be taking... talking about how the Giants, owners of the second best record in baseball, have not even begun to play their best baseball yet. So get all that. We'll continue our Warriors conversation, game five tonight, right here on 95.7 The Game. And we'll talk about it a little bit with Dave Fleming, who's going to be joining us shortly. As I mentioned, Dave Fleming, voice of your San Francisco Giants and our 95.7 The Game insider. And Dave Fleming is brought to you by Rafael Lumber and Building Supply, serving contractors, homeowners, and the community in Marin for over 50 years. Visit their showroom today as he joins us on the River Islands guest line. Good morning, Dave. Joe Spadoni alongside Joe Shasky. Tough loss yesterday, but Steven Rizzotto, the guy working the board today, let me know. That was the second highest attendance ever yesterday at Petco Park, over 47,000 people. Did it feel like that in the building, Dave?
It absolutely felt like that. We tried here's a little inside baseball for you. The press dining with the Padres do many, many things well. Press dining is not one of the things that they do very well. So we often will just go to the broadcast booth, the press level. You can walk out the back door and kind of be on the club level of the ballpark. And it's a very open ballpark. And so there's several places to go grab a quick bite right close by. And like an hour and 20 minutes before the game, we walked outside figuring, oh, let's go get a bite to eat and we'll eat out there. We could hardly walk. It was so crowded. We couldn't get anything. The lines were so long. So we just sort of walked around and walked right back inside. Every spot in that ballpark was taken last night. It was quite a night to be there. 47,000 people were. I think they list the capacity of the park at like 42,000. So it was a cool night to be there. They got it going on down here.
Yeah, they do. And that pitcher had it going on as well. I thought he was, dealing for the most part, and he's been on fire. He's been as good as Logan Webb has been this year, if not a little better. I look at this team right now and like, obviously there's concerns on the lineup and there are specific guys, but Adames, though the numbers don't look great, for his last, let's see, I got last 7 of his last 25. And to me, it's just the at-bats look better. And he hit that ball yesterday with that backspin to right center. You're never going to hit that at AT&T. That's not a home run at AT&T, or excuse me, Oracle Park. But it was really nice to see him get that swing off early and to see how excited he was. I feel like he's coming around. He's got to heat up here, right?
For sure, and he's going to. I mean, and if you look at historically, we looked it up yesterday, his numbers in the first month of the year are by far the worst numbers for his career, by far, not close. And the best numbers for his career are August and then September. So he's a guy who does tend to kind of build into the season. He tends to start off pretty slowly. I think there's definitely an element of trying to prove himself with his new contract. I think there's definitely going to be an adjustment period to the home ballpark, and exactly what you just said. I mean, I think my only worry about Adames in this first month has been, is he already trying to change his approach to pull the ball more, getting pull happy because he doesn't get rewarded for those hard hit balls out to right center field. I hope that doesn't happen. And I think when you watch last night, you think it's not happening. He still has that approach. So I am confident that Willy Adames is going to have a good, solid year for the Giants, and hopefully even better than that. He's always been a slow starter, and this year, obviously, no exception.
Talking to Dave Fleming here on the Morning Roast, Giants broadcaster, obviously, for the San Francisco Giants. So there you go. Talking about struggles with this team offensively, Willy Adames hopefully getting it going. But another guy, he did have a double last night in Lamont Wade Jr. advancing on a throwing error to third. The batsmen struggle. I mean, Chasky said something this morning. I was like, he has 9 hits in total this season. Yeah. I think he told me 9. It's been a struggle for Lamont Wade.
Him and Bailey have just been.
That's what I'm getting at right now. Him, Patrick Bailey. Of those two guys, Dave, and obviously Patrick Bailey getting the walk-off over the weekend, encouraging. Hopefully that could be a springboard going forward. But what are you seeing from Lamont right now as a guy that, starting the season, we were talking about being a leadoff guy and setting the tone, and right now he's struggling to batting at the bottom of the lineup. What are we seeing or not seeing from Lamont right now that's got you concerned?
Definitely better the last week, definitely. I think when you see the walks come for Lamont, you know he's feeling more comfortable. That's always got to be a big part of his game. And when he's not chasing, I think that tells you, okay, now he's seeing it much better. But the beginning part of the year, what was so alarming was he wasn't walking and he was striking out so much. So it was like, man, he's just out of whack. That is not the case anymore. So I think we're going to get normal Lamont Wade here going forward. It was a very encouraging night for him last night. You know, there hasn't been a ton of oomph behind his batted balls. He smoked a couple on Sunday. I thought that was the best sign of all. Just hitting it harder. There have been a lot of instances this year of Lamont, you know, like squaring it up. It looks good. It sounds good. And then you look down at the Statcast and it's 95, not 105. The thing about Wade as opposed to Bailey, like Patrick is, you know, he's playing a premium defensive position and playing it well. Lamont has to hit to be a valuable player. He just does. And that's true for every first baseman, maybe other than like, you know, JT Snow or Keith Hernandez. Like, you know, you got to be so good on defense at first to account for struggles on offense and really be helping your team. So that's where the difference, I think, between those two players is. I think Patrick's at-bats have been a lot better here in the last 3 or 4 days. That's encouraging to me also. But Wade is the one where it's just hard for him to contribute. He's not a fast base runner. He's not going to be stealing bases. He's got to hit and be on base to be a valuable player.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And, you know, they do have more speed in general. Like, but you look up and stolen bases, they're like in the 20s, you know, in terms of their team speed. It's the strikeouts. They're striking out a lot. They do get some walks. It's just you're never going to have a lot of power from a lot of this lineup. So, you know, the lineup is one element. The starting staff is the one I'm a little more concerned with. ERA is not bad. It really isn't. But they've been anchored by this bullpen. Number 2 bullpen ERA, only team above them, the Padres. Birdsong has been amazing. Miller's been amazing. Randy Rodriguez, Doval, Rogers. Is there a chance maybe they put Birdsong into the starting rotation to kind of give a bolster to that side, or is it a little too premature?
That, I would say that's premature for 2 reasons. Number 1, Birdsong is thriving in this role and has been a big reason for the Giants' success. Like, not just the games that he's pitched, they've generally been winning because of his contributions, but also because he just has saved, you know, they just went 17 games without an off day early in the season, and not only didn't overtax their bullpen, some guys needed more work. I mean, I've never seen that before, really, truly. The bullpen was managed beautifully over those 17 days. Birdsong gets a lot of credit for that. So I think that's reason number 1. Reason number 2 is the veteran starters that they have are going to get a long leash. They are. And they've earned it with their track record, with the contracts they have, all that stuff. You know, if somebody really, truly, if somebody gets hurt, if there's a big fall off in performance, then I think that we can have the discussion. For now, though, I think everybody's throwing reasonably well enough that that you're going to see status quo. The Giants right now are leaning on status quo. I think a big part of Bob's philosophy is, especially early in the year, let's let everybody settle into their roles. We're not going to, you know, knee-jerk react to anything right now. And I think that has been a philosophy that served this team well. That can change, though. The urgency of the season changes. That can change. For now, I think you're going to see the default be, it's working. Let's keep it the way it is.
Look, everybody wants to make moves, right? And you're sitting here, you see Bryce Eldridge hit a double, and you're dreaming about him, but he's probably far away at this current moment. But I feel like they do have an option, you know, to maybe make a move for somebody. You got guys in AAA that are just on the fringe of cracking the rotation, being a contributor on an everyday team. If you were to make a move for this team, what would you recommend that they go get? Because I have my own thoughts, but what does this team need right now? Like they're not hitting lefties that great. There's a couple guys that are doing well. I mean, a first base DH guy to spell Wilmer. What are you looking at in particular?
Yeah, I think number one, getting Gerard Encarnacion healthy is going to help this team. Give Wilmer a little more rest time. You know, Wilmer, they are going to be careful with Wilmer because they just need to protect his health. And even DHing, but doing it every single day is going to be taxing for him. So Encarnacion's going to help. You're right to identify the left-handed problem, man. It's confounding to me. This team on paper should kill left-handers, and they are, 2-7 against left-handed starters this year? Their record against right-handed starters is amazing, and that is the opposite of what I think you would expect if you just looked at this team on paper. They need, you know, Matos, if you're going to be the right-handed side of a platoon and you don't hit lefties, that there is not a big role for you. Mm-hmm. You're seeing Mike Yastrzemski. You know, last night the Giants are down by a run late against a left-handed pitcher, and Yaz stays in the game. And that's, you know, that's been happening over and over again. And the reason is because Matos hasn't hit lefties at all. And so that is hurting this team right now. Like, it's one thing to say we're going to stick with our lineup, stick with our guys. It's another thing to really not feel like you've got an option off the bench when you're down late in a game. And that's kind of the feeling that they have right now, I think. So it would really help if Matos would hit left-handers. If he's not going to, then maybe he'd be better served by being in AAA and just getting more experience and more at-bats. Everybody still believes in his talent level, but he, you know, when you're not getting many at-bats at all, and then you're not available off the bench to pinch hit against the tough lefty because you're just not hitting him, that's a tough spot. So I would say right now, this minute, assuming Lamont's going to be Lamont and be okay, which I am still assuming that, then I think that would be the number one thing that could help this Giants team.
Yeah, I mean, I know you're not going to be able to say a name. I'm going to throw a name out there, and you don't have to respond to it, but Tristan Casas from Boston would be a guy that I'd be looking at hard. I think he can be your DH, play first base. I think he hits against lefties. I mean, he was a small sample size this year. I would like to see them get that. But outside of that, it does feel like the vibes at the ballpark in general, as you're referencing San Diego and how great it feels like it's coming back. And there was a play over the weekend, the Elliot Ramos, you know, down the line throw, and then him kind of like hesitating between second and third, and then him going, everybody called it Little League. Now, Dave, you've been to a lot of Little League games. I've seen you out there watching your son who's now in high school, and I don't mean to put your info out there, but even in Little League, we'd say, hey, let's not throw the ball around. What is it about the Giants being involved in so many of these plays over the years, I feel like?
The Bellinger one, right, Dave?
Yes.
I thought of that immediately.
It happens all
your
the
famous
time
calls.
To the
Bellinger throws it so high. Continue.
I mean, going back to 2010, we had we kept track of RTIs, runs thrown in. You know,
Darren
it was like
Ford.
It has been a thing. I don't, you know, maybe some of it seems like a lot of it happens at home. Maybe some of it is, you know, you got the conditions of the ballpark and a night game, and sometimes teams maybe aren't fully focused or engaged the way they would be somewhere. I don't know. It's a cool thing. It's a hard thing to explain. And you're right about whatever you want to call it, the vibe, the feeling around the team. I think this is a very likable Giants team, and Giants fans are enjoying watching this team play. Even last night, Nick Pivetta has been about the best guy in the league, and he was dominating early. And then here we look up, it's the sixth inning, and Adames hits a double, Jung-Hoo Lee knocks him in, Wade has that hit, and you're one swing away. Patrick Bailey is up there with the tying run at third in the sixth inning. I don't believe the last couple years we saw much of that from the Giants. If they fell behind early, it was an uphill climb big time. And so part of why I think this team is so likable is they've been really, really scrappy and resilient, and they haven't been out of games. Like last night the third largest margin of defeat of the year for the Giants? Like they have been in every single game but one. There's one game all year. We're a month in where they have sort of been knocked out and, haven't had a chance late. That's a pretty remarkable thing.
Who was Pivetta yelling at? Was he yelling at Bailey at second base on that strikeout that he had to end the inning? Or was he yelling to a teammate? What happened there?
No, he was yelling at Bailey. I think Bogaerts, it looked to me like Bogaerts signaled to the dugout. He's the one who said, we got to come out and have this meeting. And I think Diaz, the catcher, I haven't heard this from them, but this was just my read of it. Diaz was setting up location early. I mean, in the PitchCom era, in the old days, the guy at second is trying to pick up the signs. And if he can pick them up and get the signs, then he's going to relay some info if he can do it subtly. I mean, that's just been a part of the game forever. Now you can't do that with PitchCom. The only thing you can do is relay location if the catcher is setting up early and giving it away. And I think Bogaerts thought that Bailey was doing that. And so they call this meeting. I mean, it's really weird, right? It's 2-2, like the biggest at bat of the game in some ways. The Giants had a little momentum there, and Yastrzemski's right in the middle of the at-bat. Time, here comes the pitching coach. Like, huh? And so then one pitch later, he strikes out Yaz, and Pivetta yelled back at Bailey. I think that's what was going on.
Yeah. Talking with Dave Fleming, Giants broadcaster, here on the Morning Roast as they wrap up this quick two-game set down in San Diego later today at 1 o'clock. Roop v. King today at Petco Park. And then they got that four-game series against maybe one of the worst teams I've seen early on in baseball lately, the Colorado Rockies. My God, it has been a tough season, to say the least, for them. So hopefully the Giants can get fat and happy there. You got to take care of those games against a team like that, considering where the Padres are at, where the Dodgers and where the D-backs are. Those are almost must-wins, it feels like, Dave. Speaking of a must-win, not quite a must-win, but I know Shasky's feeling like it tonight. Big game down in Houston. I don't know if you're aware. Game 5, Warriors-Rockets. Dubs up 3-1, and Joe, you were out a couple weeks ago when we had Grandy filling in for you,
okay,
and we asked Dave to preview the series, and Dave, he was like, I'd be shocked if the Houston Rockets won this series, and you know what? At this point, I also would be shocked because, the history of 3-1 leads. I know, Joe, you're feeling some type of way about it when I bring it up, but in the history of the NBA in a 7-game series, Dave, as you know, 95% of the teams leading 3-1 in 7-game series go on to win said series. So mathematically, you got to feel pretty good. But given where the age is at with this team, Jimmy Butler, 35, Draymond Green, 35, Stephen Curry, 37, it's not a must win, but it feels like just to get the old guys some rest, you want to take care of business tonight, right?
Sure, but what you asked me that 2 weeks ago, and I said the Warriors are going to win this series, period. And I will say that again. They are going to win this series. So the main thing is, ideal world, yeah, you win it tonight and you get that rest. But I don't really care as long as you win the series. In the playoffs, you get enough off days built in. You can get rest. You can get refreshed. I really believe that. So whatever it takes, even if they lose tonight, they're going to come back home and they'll win game 6 and move on. They're winning this series.
Hey, be honest. What are your thoughts on one Dylan Brooks for the Houston Rockets? He's currently enemy number one here in the Bay Area.
Well, here's what I would say. If you're a Warriors fan, you cannot chirp about a guy who plays the game like that. Because for 15 years, we've watched Draymond play the game. Maybe not exactly like that, but Draymond's whole act is he's going to push and shove and annoy and harass and harangue and try to get under people's skin. And Draymond is a much better player than Dylan Brooks. Draymond's going to the Hall of Fame someday. But I don't think as a Warriors fan, you've got a lot of wiggle room to just berate the way Dylan Brooks goes about it, because he's basically going out of the Draymond Green playbook with the way he plays. Different skill sets for those two guys, but I don't think the Warriors have a lot of room to complain about that.
You know, last night, I'm not sure if you caught it, but Halliburton's dad walked onto the floor, and he just did some shenanigans with Giannis. As Giannis loses, it's the end of the series, and Halliburton's dad's kind of rubbing it on him. And it's Halliburton, the kid's best moment in the NBA to that point, essentially. And I feel like the dad one-upped him. And, you know, you're a sports dad, right? You got, you know, obviously your daughters and your son, and now you're obviously a broadcaster, so you've got a good balance on both of these things. Especially given the weekend that we had with Deion and Shador, and we've seen what happened with T. Moran, there's levels to how professional athletes' parents act, and it's all over the map. Just your general consensus as a dad, as a broadcaster, when you see things like that happen on the floor, because you're not one of those sports dads that hangs over home plate, like yelling at your kid to, like, you know, grip it tighter and to get a hit here with a 3-2 count. Like, I think you're pretty reasonable when it comes to this.
God, I hope so. for everybody listening, because there are, you know, a lot of your listeners are parents of kids who play sports. For everybody listening, if you are that mom or dad, shut up, cheer for your kid, be positive. Don't do what all these examples you're saying are. Just support your kid, get them to the games, support their interest and love of sports, and don't be that sport parent. You're not helping. You're only hurting. You are not helping your kid's cause by acting that way at all. Your kid is not benefiting from you yelling or screaming or grilling after the game and going over every detail of the game in the car ride home. Your kid does not want that. That is not helping. Just be a supportive parent and support in the way that makes your kid better. You know, if that means some extra training sessions that, you know, you dig into your wallet and support your kid that way, or just driving and getting them everywhere, whatever it is, taking them out and shooting hoops with them and, you know, having some father-son time, father-daughter time, whatever. But don't be that sports dad, please. You're not helping. You're hurting your own kid. Hey, stop it.
Hey, Dave. No, it's very well said.
God, I love you, Dave.
We really appreciate your time today. Good luck on the call later. And let's get fat and happy here against the Rockies. I don't want anything. A split against that Rockies team would feel disappointing, Dave. I got to be honest. You got to take at least three, right?
Sure, it feels that way. But, it, you know, sports doesn't work that way. They are going to, I mean, it, in a way, I want them to win some games. You know, win today. I just, you know, I hate it. I feel you. You know, you saw Ryan Walker. I thought Ryan Walker put it beautifully this weekend. Jock Peterson came up against him in a big spot, and after the game he said, he's the last guy I wanted to face. Like, Jock Peterson is way better than 1-for-41 or whatever he was coming into that at bat. And it does, you know, it just scares you. You know the Rockies are going to win some games at some point. But you're right. Your big picture point is right. The Giants have had a brutally tough schedule, and they're finally getting a team. Finally, it's the first team the Giants have played all year. I guess you could say the Angels, but even the Angels are funky and a pretty talented roster overall. And the Giants still should have won that series. But other than that, this is the first sort of breather in the whole schedule, the whole year. At home against the Rockies, you want to win those games.
Dave, good stuff, man. Appreciate it, and good luck on the call later.
I'd like to win this game today.
Yes, let's focus on the now, right?
I'm with you.
How about the Giants and a Warriors win tonight? Would that be great? Let's get that. Come on.
Sign me up. I'm in.
Let's go.
That's Dave Fleming.
Hey, Fleming, man.
Brought to you by Rafael Lumber and Building Supplies, serving contractors, homeowners, and the community in Marin for over 50 years. Visit their showroom today. Great stuff with Dave Fleming there. And let's carry that conversation that we had a little bit earlier. For those of you that missed what happened last night, the Bucks and Pacers were playing in their first round matchup in the Eastern Conference playoffs. Went to overtime. Giannis was incredible, but they lost. Obviously, Dame Lillard lost in that series. Torn Achilles, brutal. But the Pacers have been pretty good all season long, and they win. And Tyrese Halliburton had a big layup, big moment for him. And his dad was sitting courtside, I guess, and he was chirping. And then after they're saying their hugs and goodbyes, because the series is over and Giannis is on the court saying goodbye to everyone, There was some jawing going on, and all of a sudden, John Halliburton, I should say, Tyrese's father, started saying stuff to Giannis, and Giannis is like, "What the hell are you doing, dude?" Like, and then people had to be separated.
I didn't even know it was a dad. I thought it was a fan.
I thought it was a bald guy wearing a Halliburton jersey.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't know who that was. But Giannis said some things after the game that I thought was very humble in his regards, and it shows you the kind of person and player Giannis is, and the kind of guy that you would root for as a face of your franchise. Here he is talking about the trash talk and not wanting to engage in it.
I believe like being humble in victory. That's how I am. Now there can be a lot of people out there that are like, no, when you win the game, you gotta talk and you know it's a green light for you to be disrespectful towards somebody else. I disagree. I've won the championship. They haven't. Okay, and that doesn't say anything. I'm not trying to minimize their effort, but I remember when I won, my mom, that she's never missed the games from February 11th or 13th when she came in Milwaukee against the Knicks. She's never missed a game. When we won the championship, I remember my mom, she was scared to cross. She was like, am I allowed to come and hug my son? I see, except now my brother does media for this year. He wants to come back and play. Except the Nets, you've never seen my family. Like, see, of course I see. This is not something that we do. We don't. I try to keep my family away from the game. Losing the game, emotions run high. Having a fan, which at the moment I thought he was a fan, but then I realized it was Tyrese's son, which I love Tyrese. I think he's a great competitor. He was his dad, sorry. Coming in the floor and showing me his son a towel with his face. This is what we do. This is what we do. This is what we do. I feel like that's very, very disrespectful.
So, you know, forget the actual NBA stuff, right? Where we, Team Morant. That's what people are going to say. LeVar Ball. We're going to, like, point these people. I'm just going to go U Sports because that's where I've, you know, been coached 20 years. And I see it all
your
the
hat
time.
Right now.
Yeah, I see it all the time. When you coach long enough, you realize, like, anybody can coach talent, like, talented players, right? And I see all these people like, I want to get this kid on my team and that kid on my team and that kid on my team. And what I've learned, I'd rather have good parents. And I have one rule. It's very simple. And Steven, you've seen me on the field coaching. One rule, don't be a jerk. And 9 times out of 10, I'm talking to the parents, not to the kid. And I truly believe that I think that there are a lot of people out there that do it the right way. They come to the games. They don't just support their kid. They're supporting other kids, uncle, grandma, brothers, sisters, whatever. Everyone shows up. 99% of people do it right. And occasionally you get two extremes. Number one, my particular son is the greatest, or daughter is the greatest who ever lived and can do no wrong, which is really extreme.
The greatest player.
Or they can never do anything right, which is a whole nother extreme. And it's like, hey, man, you got to be somewhere in the middle on this
right.
one. And I'll use this example. No one likes when their kid's up to bat and you look over and you see that guy's parent standing behind home plate, hovering over that kid, trying to have an at-bat. That kid feels so lonely. Mm-hmm. I don't care how good or how bad that player is. You're like breathing over them. They're out here to have fun. Very few are going to make their high school team, let alone play varsity sports. I'm talking about freshman sports, let alone varsity sports. Now think how few from high school are actually going to go on to the next level. So most of them aren't going to be playing professional. Almost all of them. You'll be lucky if one or two from your town goes on to do something in Division I. It's like we all need to take a deep breath. This is about building confidence and hopefully that they love the sport and like it. And I think this is a great microcosm of probably a good dad who had a bad moment and needs to check himself a little and relax. He's probably a good dad. I don't know him. I'm just guessing. But like sometimes we take things a little too far. And now that I am a dad, it's really difficult because you're rooting for your own son and you want them to be the guy. Everyone thinks their kid's the greatest, you know? Like, I put videos out there, stuff, him shooting balls. We're having fun with it. And I don't know what I'm going to be like when he's playing ball. But I know this. I know that my wife will be policing my own actions to keep me in check so that I don't become helicopter dad that's doing a disservice to my own son's accomplishments and robbing him from that moment.
Right. You don't want to be that dad. And I found myself, even when Benny was doing like a 4 or 5 year old basketball camp, it's like they're 4 and 5 years old. Like, what do you like? And you've
coached, you could be proud. Right?
Like, no, I'm being proud. It's literally, no, I found myself because he wasn't paying attention. And I was like, Benny, look at the coach and pay attention. I was doing, like, but again, he's 4 or 5 years old. I'm just telling him to, like, look. So it's a little different. Of course, when he gets 6, 7, he's actually like playing in the games. I'm going to have to check myself and be like, it's fine, it's fine, it's fine. I keep telling yourself. Because you just, ultimately, I think most parents want this. You want what's best for your kid.
Of course. Now,
everyone wants just what's best for their kid.
Want them to succeed.
And a lot of times, they're first-time parents, and they just don't know how to act. And that's why having a couple kids, I have two now, I've learned a lot from my mistakes with the first kid.
Of course.
They're the test child, right? That's how it is in this. Uh-huh. If you ever have a second kid, you'll learn this. LJ's the test child. We'll get another one and we'll figure it out then, right? every bumps and bruises, like first time, it's like, oh my God, Benny fell, he scraped his knees. Oh my God, we need to go to the hospital. Nora face planted yesterday in the park. I was like, hey, you good, honey? All right. She picked herself off, dusted her off. She was fine. Like that's what happens at the park. So kids, you evolve as parents, and hopefully you think you'd hope those parents evolved as it goes on. And sometimes you have to check them. Sometimes it's on the coach. Some like to get over. Hey man, like or it could be a mom. I don't know. You got to check them.
Have you ever watched that? There's like a pageant show of little girls that do pageants.
Disgusting. I think those things are.
Well, no,
it
I think
stresses
it's
me out.
It's
all that
very
stuff.
Close to travel sports.
Yeah,
where it's over the top, right?
I'm all out on like the little kid beauty pageants. I think that stuff's just weird. I'm just gonna leave.
Look,
it there.
Every culture's different. Yeah. I'm not gonna judge.
Sure, like, I am, but you could continue.
Okay,
yeah.
No, but I think it's to me what the fascinating element of those shows are is the parents and the obsession and the living vicariously through the success
yes.
of a 6 year old. And I see it in dancing, even though I don't know anything about dancing. I don't pretend to know anything. My sister danced, okay, for many, many years.
Just dance.
My niece danced. I know my buddy's daughter's a competitive dancer. I mean, these girls are awesome. Mm-hmm. Freaking awesome. And I don't know when to cheer, when to clap, because I don't know the whole dancing world.
Yeah.
And I see these mothers and these fathers on the sidelines watching them. And it's the exact same thing as sports.
Yep.
Where they're like, literally like, on them. And I'm like, are they doing this for fun so that they feel good about themselves because they're good? Or are they doing this for you to have some self-worth and live vicariously through their accomplishments? Like, we've got to all take a step back here. And again, I'm guilty of this. I don't want to make it seem like I'm not above this. Like, I root for my family. Like, I want them to win. But I'm also not robbing them of the moment and jumping onto the court and doing stuff that can embarrass them. Because you're also having to deal with the individual. And I think Halliburton's an adult. I don't know how he feels about his dad doing that. Do that with a 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old amongst their peers. You're embarrassing them.
I'll tell you what Tyrese Halliburton had to say about that in Fast Five. So Tyrese Halliburton, if you're just joining us, his father, John Halliburton, got into it with Giannis on the court yesterday as the Pacers defeated the Milwaukee Bucks in 5 games to advance to the second round. And Giannis had some thoughts on it, and Halliburton himself did as well. Tyrese, that is. Quote, after the game, as far as the incident between Giannis and my pops, I had no idea it happened until I got to the back and was showed the video. Me and my pops have talked about that, and I don't agree with what transpired there from him. You know, basketball is basketball, and let's keep it on the court. He just got excited, saw his son make a game winner, it came on the court, we had a conversation, and he needs me to just allow me to play basketball and stay over there. I'll come over to him to celebrate. He also said that him and Giannis, John that is, Halliburton and Giannis spoke after the game and quote, they're in a good place. So it all had a happy ending. And Tyrese, I appreciate them on his perspective saying, dad, you need to calm down. Like that's good for the player in saying that and making sure Giannis and him were in a good place. So it all had a happy ending. I'm sure all those baseball moms and dads also do the same, right, Joe?
Yes.
Yes.
I'm going to give you an example of my own life. And
oh, look, no.
I'm going to laugh a little here because we have to laugh. I think it's all.
Did your dad ever do this to you, by the way?
I'm going to tell you right now.
Oh, there it is.
I love my dad. All right. And the irony of my dad is that he actually was right looking back on
it. I can't find the Toms.
But I had my dad yell at a coach, a high school coach.
Oh, no.
And his point is actually was a good one, and he was right. It embarrassed me to no belief. And I think it was more my dad fighting for a group of boys that weren't getting a fair shake. And looking back on it, I have a different perspective than when I went through it. When I went through it, I was so embarrassed.
Wow.
So embarrassed amongst my buddies. But I think, like, looking back on it, he meant well. And if we're being 100, he did know more than the coach. He was better than that coach. Right? There are times when the actions are wrong, but it comes from the right place. And he might have been right in his mind and in his heart and his soul. He just did it the wrong way. And that was my dad in a nutshell. And I love him to death. And it's, you know, I legitimately love him. And he was not perfect. He would have leaned into it and admitted where he made mistakes. And he would do all that. But like, having been on the receiving end of this, it was horrifically embarrassing. And the anxiety filled me. But I love him. And he apologized to me 10 times over and whatever. And you know what? My buddies still laugh. And they're like, yeah, he was right. And he should have been the coach of that team probably.
There you go. That's a great story. We miss you, Papa Shasky. And good stuff. And anytime you can get a Papa Shasky story, please just.
I've got
we're talking
a thousand
about.
Of them.
I need more.
I
in
mean,
my life.
Steven's seen him on the field. He was who he like. He was exactly who he is.
Denny Green. They are who we thought they were.
It's exactly it.
What you got, Steven?
Yeah, real quick. There's a conversation earlier about whether coaches should be involved in confrontation with players of any kind, and I'm so out on that. Coaches should not be involved in talking to players, talking to opponents, being involved in any confrontation that happens. They should not be involved at all. They should stay on the bench. Let the players police themselves. Stay back because you end up looking like the small guy in that situation. I disagree with you, Spadoni.
Wow, I think that's a subtle shot at Matt Nahegan. Matt, you listen to this? Your producers don't want to be checked. That's what I'm getting at here.
Like when that Astro bench coach was going at that A player.
Ramon Laureano.
It was like, dude, sit down. Like, or like when Pedro threw,
Don Zimmer.
Don Zimmer. Thank you very much. Like, Don, you ran out there. What'd you think was going to happen?
Don Zimmer in his 70s charged at Pedro Martinez. Ran
in the
after
middle
him.
Of just insanity.
He did a hard 90 to Pedro Martinez's chest.
While you bring that up, I want you guys to look it up right now. 1986. It's black and white. Giants, Cardinals. No, not 87. 86. Mm. It's like a 4 or 5 minute fight, and it's only in black and white, and it's on YouTube right now. It's incredible. The two coaches, Roger Craig and Whitey Herzog, go at it on the field physically. It's incredible. Kruko's in the mix, too.
Is there any coach that could take on Ime Udoka in the NBA right now?
What, physically?
Physically. Like, if they had to, like, fight someone. Like, no one?
It's basically him and Man Campbell.
Dan Campbell, yeah? There's someone else in, like, the NFL. There has to be. That's pretty big. I actually would have said Antonio Pierce, but he's no longer the Raiders head coach. Love you, Pete Carroll. You don't want that smoke.
I also wouldn't sleep on Sean McVay. That guy does not skip leg day or chest day.
Yeah, he's short, though. He's in, like, the flyweight division.
Don't sleep on the small guys. He's got Rey Mysterio power.
Well, there's a reason why in the UFC there's different power rankings of weight classes. He'd be in the George St. Pierre class, not the John Jones class.
As we close the loop on dads that are crazy, just go watch the Randy Marsh South Park episode.
Those Americans.
Dude, where he fights his way to the state championship.
Dad shows no fear.
Oh, that's the dad I gotta fight.
That was a great one.
Dad, I love you. He's like, yeah, he cheers at the end. It was great. Continue, Sam. Sorry.
Speaking of dads, I'm kind of curious to the two dads here. What if your kid cost 95.7 $250,000? Or better yet, cost you personally $100,000?
That is the life that Jeff Ulbrich
is living this week because his son Jax prank called Shedeur Sanders. The NFL found out it was him. And, of course, you know, the kid, he apologized, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, NFL finding the Falcons $250,000.
I have a big mouth sometimes.
And then, yeah, slapping Ulbrich with an extra $100,000 just for good measure. So, way to go, Jax. Maybe don't film it next time.
Well, it was so cruel.
Yeah, it was dumb. That's what it was. It was
immature,
dumb move. That was the Fast Five brought to you by Xfinity. At home or on the go, you'll get the fastest internet to all your devices. Steiny and Guru are next, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Here for you, here for good.